Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Our guests today use vastly different methods to fight a modern version of slavery, the global sex trade. Guy Jacobson was backpacking in Cambodia when a group of very young girls aggressively tried to offer him sex for money. After he repeatedly refused, they revealed to him that they would be beaten by the brothel owners if they returned empty-handed. The appalling experience a decade ago motivated Jacobson to create a nonprofit organization, the Red Light Children Campaign, and the New York lawyer began producing documentary films about child prostitution in Cambodia. The crews went undercover in brothels using espionage equipment and secret cameras. Here's a clip from the trailer of the latest film, now in the midst of distribution.
There is no country in the world where there isn't some dimension of trafficking and exploitation of children. There is no country that isn't touched by it.
All over the world, men want sex. There's a demand that sadly is fostered by our cultures, Western and Eastern.
What's shocking is how young the children are when they are sold into these brothels.
Jane Taffel is the executive director of Hagar International. The religious organization operates in Cambodia, Vietnam, and Afghanistan. Mike McGraw is an investigative reporter for the Kansas City Star. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, and Mike and his team spent 6 months investigating the effectiveness of America's efforts to stop human trafficking. Before we, Guy, Jane, and Mark, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you for having me.
Before digging into your projects, let me ask each of you to provide a brief overview of your objective and then cite maybe one success story stemming from your work. I'll start with Jane.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Hagar International was founded in Cambodia in the early 90s. And what we do is we provide long-term recovery services to victims. And we have stepped into Afghanistan and Vietnam more recently, just over the last 2, 3, 4 years, with the same objective. We're not involved with prevention. We're involved with helping the individuals who have been victimized, traumatized, and helping them regain a full, healthy life in mainstream communities. So I guess my success story, we focus very much on the individual. We're not about huge, huge numbers. We're about lives that can be restored through normal life. And we have many success stories of that type, girls who have been sold at hideously young ages, often by their own families, and after a number of years of intensive trauma care and providing other supportive services, education, et cetera. We have young women now who are stepping into university and who are just pumped to serve their countries and prevent similar abuses from happening to other children in Cambodia today.
Right. I saw on your website, HagarInternational.org, there's a whole series of stories of children who have got their lives back together because of the work you're doing. And Guy, if you could also brief us on your objective.
Sure. The Red Light Children is focusing on how, on a completely the other side, if you wish, of the Hagar work and of this issue of child sexual exploitation, and focus on the demand. How do we actually decrease the number of people, clients that are willing to pay money to either download internet child pornography, go on a sex tour and have sex with kids in any other country, or sexually abuse kids here, right here in the U.S. Our effort, I'll say, is kind of the two main things that we wanted to achieve. The first was to basically raise awareness to a very complicated but like horrifying crime against humanity that is happening right now, not only here in the U.S. and not only there in, you know, in Asia or there to somebody else, but it's happening right now in every city, big or small, in the world. So, and that issue and the numbers that I discovered, as you did in the introduction, once I got involved and I said, okay, beyond giving the little girl some money, I should do something more. And I started to research this issue, and I was horrified to find out the scope of the problem. And at that time, and we're speaking about early 2002, 2003, really there was very, very little done in the press about this issue. And that most people that I spoke with were extremely educated, did not hear or know the scope of the problem. I did not realize that this problem is right here in the U.S., in our backyard or front porch or living room. So the first step for us was, well, if somebody doesn't know there's a problem, let's expose it. And we utilize a number of films Holly, which came out a couple of years ago and been now shown in over 130 countries and is used by the State Department as a tool to train all of their personnel as to the problem of child exploitation. And so raising awareness on a global basis for a global problem was, I think, both the main focus of us, but also a main success as to how far a small independent film could have, how much impact it made on this issue.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, and the other part of fighting specifically the demand, we've been working with a variety of governments, both local, state, and federal in the U.S. and internationally, to help them understand the various elements of this problem and how, and since my background is in law and economics, to help them construct laws that will be more specific, targeting the demand, and therefore hopefully decreasing the problem by decreasing the number of people that will act on that will actually take advantage of those kids.
Right, and the trailer of the film Holly, one of the actors asks this provocative question: if how would you react if you found out a child molester was living next door? And then argues that the problem of sex abuse at home or abroad is basically the same. And is that also one of your goals to bring this problem home to people?
And it is absolutely one of my goals because I did not know when I started the scope of the problem right here at home. I live in New York City, and I did not realize that in New York City there are many dozens, if not hundreds, of brothels of with sex slaves in them, and some of which are underage, and that was kind of how it was, you know, basically how is that something that we do not know that is happening right here in the U.S. And I think that in the last couple of years, this issue is there's more focus on it. But I wanted to make sure that people don't brush it away just by saying, oh, no, it's not happening to me. It's not happening to my friends. It's not happening to my neighbors. It's not happening in my school. It's not. And actually, it does happen both to the kids in any school, that in any city in the U.S., but it also might have that the actual people who that the perpetrators, the demand, maybe your next door neighbor who is downloading child internet, you know, a child pornography, or is going on a sex tour to another country, or maybe the one that is abusing a kid in your neighborhood.
Right. And speaking of scope, the U.S. State Department reports that between 600,000 and 800,000 people are trafficked across borders each year, and more than half of the victims are children. And Mike, in your reporting, you found out that while millions are being spent each year to combat international sex trafficking, funding for domestic victims was lacking. Has that changed since your series came out?
Well, there was a huge increase in funding, or a large increase in funding under Obama, but I'm not sure it's caught up. Our goal in taking a look at a kind of a look inward was to look at the fact that the U.S. publishes every year, as you mentioned, the Trafficking in Persons Report. And up until our series ran, they basically graded each country on a three-tier basis. Tier one was the worst, tier three was the best. And there's only one country the State Department didn't give a grade to, and that was the U.S. So classic investigative reporting would compare the mission to the reality. And what we found in our reporting was that the U.S., even though it preaches to the rest of the world about how best to deal with the problem, some former ambassadors to the State Department representing human trafficking victims would give the U.S. a Tier 2 rating. Kind of a Midland rating. The year after our series ran, under Secretary of State Clinton, the U.S. did give itself a rating for the first time in 10 years, and it gave itself a Tier 3 rating, the best.
Do you think that they deserve that rating?
The sources we talked to would question that for a number of reasons. They're probably the most underserved trafficking victim in the U.S., at least in terms of federal dollars spent, is domestic sex trafficking victims, young girls, young U.S. citizens who are sex trafficked. There are very few facilities to take them in when they're discovered. Law enforcement is poorly trained to determine that they're trafficking victims as opposed to law-breaking prostitutes. And actually, state laws and federal enforcement of the U.S. anti-trafficking law, which was passed in 2000, federal enforcement is spotty. You might find a U.S. attorney's office in one part of the country, like Kansas City has one assistant U.S. attorney who's very, very aggressive on human trafficking issues, domestic and foreign victims. But you might find other U.S. attorney's offices around the country who would prosecute a classic trafficking case as harboring an illegal alien, where the penalties are much lighter. And then there's a huge difference from state to state in the U.S. in how well the states have dealt with this issue. The feds can't do everything.
Right.
And frankly, we found several nonprofits have done state-by-state analysis, and Kansas, which is governed now by Sam Brownback, a former U.S. senator who was one of the co-sponsors of the anti-trafficking bill in 2000, Kansas does a relatively poor job of prosecuting human traffickers, despite it being the original free state, you know, admitted to the Union on the idea that it was a free state during the Civil War. Missouri, on the other hand, which was a slave state, has gotten very good marks. So history's kind of reversed itself.
Right. Let's move on to a couple of current events right now. There are concerns that that the Summer Olympics in London and the Euro Cup in Poland and Ukraine this summer are going to bring a spike in human trafficking and sex trafficking. And there are some efforts to counteract that. I thought one thing interesting was that there's an effort to get corporations to get on board in strengthening the focus against human trafficking and persuade companies to get involved and promote socially responsible investing. Are you guys involved in these efforts to counteract the spike in human trafficking during these events, or what do you think should be done to reduce this? Jane, are you involved at all with the Christian Brothers Investment Services in their efforts?
No, actually, we're not. I would just concur with what you said, that whenever large events like this are held and large groups congregate, sadly, prostitution spikes, and those that are being that are trafficked into prostitution are very, very prevalent at these events. So it's I'm hopeful that there is a lot of attention going towards it, but no, Hager is not specifically involved.
Okay. And how would you, let's see, I guess we can also talk about, follow up on the comments that Mike made on demand. Are you seeing, Guy, reductions in demand, and are states doing enough to here domestically to try to reduce demand?
I think that we see a better understanding of some of the forces that are working behind the scene, and at least a more analytical, maybe efforts to go after this problem. I think that the I'm going back to the issue of the big events. I think that that's where you hear about people who are moved across international border or moved, you know, to the event. But this is usually it just a temporary increase in a particular place where they move the supply to where the demand is. So if you have, you know, a huge event in what is the World Cup or Euro or the Olympics, now you have, you know, a lot more demand concentrating in a particular place, and therefore the, you know, the sex slaves are moved to where the demand is. And the answer is, and remember that victims of human trafficking, sex trafficking, the only one thing that doesn't include in the definition of human trafficking is they don't need to be moved at all. So the demand, while the, those people at those situations move, so people hear about it, I think a much bigger impact and issue is to say, to identify who are the people that are willing, that pay money and, or not pay money, but abuse, and we spoke about specifically children, which can never be prostitutes, right? By the legal definition, they are under the age of consent. And in that respect, the crimes that those people are committing, those are major crimes against humanity. It's the torturing, raping, and since a huge number of a percentage of those kids will basically die, whether it's from AIDS or other disease or be killed. You think about the torture, raping, and killing of kids. So if somebody has also said, oh, I'll go to the Olympics and then let me have sex with a 12-year-old, and I'm a good person, I donated my money to the local church. No. That's not how it works. You committed a major crime against humanity. You should be treated like you committed a crime against humanity. You are the worst criminal of them all, as far as I'm concerned. And that's kind of how we try to change the look of what people are doing and how people are treating that. The victims are by under no way, shape, or form have done, in that respect, anything wrong, and they're being taken advantage of and being committed upon like horrifying crimes.
Okay. I'd like to talk a bit about some of the victims in Cambodia and the work that you're doing there. But before we continue the discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You could also follow us on Twitter at GJJournalist. I wanted to talk to Guy. I will start with you about Cambodia, and you must have had a pretty difficult time shooting these films undercover. And were you ever threatened, were your team members facing danger because of the work you've done there?
I'll tell you the story. So when we arrived to shoot Holly in Cambodia, you know, we've called from all over the world. And about 3 days after we arrived, I got a call on my cell phone from the Interpol, and saying, so they say, which I have no idea how they found me and my phone, but saying, listen, there are already contracts on your life by the Vietnamese mafia, Chinese mafia, and Cambodian mafia. You better get the hell out of Cambodia. You know, being not particularly smart, I said, no, we're not leaving, we're shooting the film. And they were like, whoa, what do you mean, no? They're already, you know, they're going to kill you. This, you know, you're in the worst place in the world to make a movie about this subject matter. You are going to die. Get the hell out. Being very stubborn and not too smart, I guess, we stayed to shoot the film. But I actually had hired, and that's just to shoot a film about this issue, I had an entire army of bodyguards. So around, you know, like a dozen bodyguards with automatic machine guns at any given point in time dealing with that. And even now, we're speaking, you know, a few years later, there are still contracts on my life in Cambodia. I can never come back. The government doesn't want me to come back because, you know, while we that speak now on the panel, everybody agrees that, you know, this is a horrible crime against humanity. What the people who are committing it and the people who are running it, organized crime, is making many, many billions of dollars a year from human trafficking. It's actually now is considered by some the biggest crime, money-wise, moneymaker in the world, more than drugs and more than weapons smuggling. So for us, when I come and say, it was, let's sabotage your business, let's explain to governments or whatever it is that this is that we do, how to decrease the problem. Let's assume that I'm not the favorite person for the people who make many, many millions and billions of dollars off the problem.
Well, I'm glad you finished shooting and everyone stayed safe there. Now, Hager employs about 250 staff members in Cambodia. And Jane, have you also had problems working in Cambodia with backlashes?
Well, first of all, I'd say we employ about 175 in Cambodia and 250 worldwide.
Oh, okay. Okay.
As far as backlash, I guess one thing I would say with the children who have been trafficked for sex or rescued and come to our recovery shelters, they're sadly somewhat of a replacement commodity to their traffickers. And probably the more security issues we have, we also serve women who have survived domestic violence and probably more likely our security forces are engaged with protecting them when the spouse, husband, boyfriend might back after them, similar to that scenario in most places of the world. But there are cases. We had one with a little girl who had an American perpetrator where we actually did have to get 24/7 bodyguard for her because it was just a very complicated situation with her family. And perpetrators apparently paying off the family, and lots of layers of complexity. So that was an unusual case. Security is an issue, and that's handled in different ways.
And are you, Jane, and then Guy? Are you seeing that the problem has been reduced in Cambodia, or are you? Do your work and the work of other organizations fighting this problem?
Well, I would say it's kind of shifted around in certain ways. The context, the Bravo context has changed a bit. Also, it's not all sex trafficking. There are children who are enslaved as domestic servants that are taken over the border to Thailand and forced to beg. Last year, 12 months, 8 months, there's been a phenomenon in Cambodia of more women being duped by employment agencies and being flown over to Malaysia to find themselves in various forms of enslavement. So it's hard to really have a sense of overall whether we're having an increase, decrease, or staying flat. We know there's still a whole lot of unmet one area of conflict than another.
Okay. And Guy, we have about a minute and a half left, so if you can briefly answer that question. And I also wanted you to comment on how people could get a look at your films.
Well, I'll start with the poem itself. I think that it is very important to understand and very crucial that everybody who hopefully hear the show decides that at the very least they should learn a bit more about it and get involved, that we're not going to magically eradicate the problem. If there was a magic button that I knew that I can push and you know, erase all bad things, stop all bad things, whether this one and others, I will be pressing that button and not being here. But it is the involvement of each individual that can actually help us systematically put, you know, a dent in the problem and decrease it. I'm just an individual who walked in the street, just like anybody who is listening here, and encountered that problem personally. And I said, hey, you know, I need to do something about it. I never knew I'll do, you know, spend a decade of my life doing it, but to what extent? But I still said, hey, you know, although that this is an issue that I must address.
Right.
Guy, that
call to action, I think, is a great way to end this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the University of Missouri School of Journalism. Our guests today were Jane Toffel of Hager International, Mike McGraw of the Kansas City Star, and activist filmmaker Guy Jacobson. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers, Raymond Tungekar is our executive producer, Donovan Ferguson was our lead producer. Now stay with us for Free Press Watch, and join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist, where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Regina Wang. June 4th marked the 23rd anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. To recognize the anniversary, this edition examines Chinese media news. Today's news comes from CNN, Wall Street Journal, The Guardian, Xinhua, and Committee to Protect Journalists. The Chinese government clamped down on search engine terms related to the 1989 massacre, an incident where the government opened fire on hundreds of student demonstrators. Words that relate to the incident, such as fire, people, blood, tanks, are banned. State-sponsored hackers targeted Google email accounts in China, CNN reported June 6th. Users can see a message at the top of their browser that says, "Warning, we believe state-sponsored attackers may be attempting to compromise your account or a computer." Google advises users to be more creative about their passwords. A Chinese official said it's the government's duty to publish air quality results and discouraged other embassies from reporting the data, according to the state-owned newspaper Xinhua. China accuses the U.S. Embassy of publishing tweets of air pollution readings. The Chinese government said the tweets disregard the Vienna Convention and interferes in China's internal affairs. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Regina Wang. See you next week.